Reluctantly, the American prisoners did as they were told, all 150 of them crawling single file into the dark, poorly ventilated pits. They waited and waited, but heard not a single American plane, let alone 100. They huddled in the stifling dankness of their collective body heat, sweat coursing down their bare chests. The air raid bell continued to peal. Then, peeking out the ends of the trenches, the men saw several soldiers bursting into the compound. They were carrying 5-gallon buckets filled with a liquid. The buckets sloshed messily as the soldiers walked. With a quick jerk of the hands, they flung the contents into the openings of the trenches. By the smell of it on their skin, the Americans instantly recognized what it was. High-octane aviation fuel from the airstrip. Before they could apprehend the full significance of it, other soldiers tossed in lighted bamboo torches. Within seconds, the trenches exploded in flames. The men squirmed over each other and clawed at the dirt as they tried desperately to shrink from the intense heat. They choked back the smoke and the fumes, their nostrils assailed by the smell of singed hair and roasting flesh. They were trapped like termites in their own sealed nest. Only a few managed to free themselves. Dr. Carl Mango from Pennsylvania sprang from his hole, his clothes smoldering. His arms were outstretched as he pleaded, "Show some reason, please, God, show some reason." But a machine gunner mowed him down. A Navy signalman named C.C. Smith refused to go into his pit. Suddenly a soldier set upon him. He raised his saber high so that it gleamed in the midday sun, and with all his strength he brought it blade side down. Smith's head was cleaved in two, the sword finally stopping midway down the neck. A third prisoner crawled from his trench, wrested a rifle from the hands of a soldier, and shot him before receiving a mortal stab in the back. A number of men dashed toward the fence and tried to press through it, but were quickly riddled with lead, leaving a row of corpses hung from the barbed strands like drying cuttlefish. A few men managed to slip through the razor ribbon and leap from the high cliff, but more soldiers were waiting on the beach to finish them off. Recognizing the futility of escape, but wanting to wreak a parting vengeance, one burning prisoner emerged from his trench, wrapped his arms tightly around the first soldier he saw, and didn't let go. A death embrace that succeeded in setting the surprised executioner on fire. All the while, Lieutenant Sato scurried from trench to trench with saber drawn, loudly exhorting his men and occasionally punctuating his commands with a high, nervous laugh. At his order, another wave of troops approached the air raid shelters, throwing grenades into the flaming entrances and raking them with gunfire. Some of the troops poked their rifle barrels through the entrances of the trenches and fired point-blank at the huddled forms within. When Lieutenant Sato was satisfied that all 150 prisoners were dead, he ordered his men to heave the stray bodies back into the smoky pits. The soldiers splattered additional gasoline inside and reignited the trenches. They tossed in more grenades, as well as sticks of dynamite, to make it appear as though the victims had perished in an air raid after all, with the shelters receiving several direct hits from American bombs. The immense pall of smoke curling from the three subterranean pyres was noted by observers 5 miles distant, across Puerto Princesa Bay. Entries from Japanese diaries later found at the camp spoke hauntingly of December 14th. Although they were prisoners of war, one entry stated, they truly died a pitiful death. From today on, I will not hear the familiar greeting, "Good morning, Sergeant Major." The smell is unbearable.